The date is July 14th, 2000, and we're watching X-Men. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Logan to my Scott Summers.
Can you, when you edit this together, can you insert like a snicked like sound effect? And then
I'm going to say, snickety, snickety.
What up, bubs? It's Colin Stewart.
Nice. And so this week we welcome back one of our guests. He was our first guest on this show, and as we approach episode 100, we of course had to have him back. My son, Chris Wells. Welcome back, Chris.
Yo. What's happening, y'all?
What's happening? Yeah, he could be the Iceman.
I want to be Storm.
You want to be Storm.
Yeah.
Breaking through that glass ceiling, my son.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, that's actually not the craziest campaign for Storm that was out there either, because I read that Mariah Carey really wanted to be Storm and campaigned heavily for it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It would have been fun to have a Mariah Carey song for the X-Men soundtrack.
I'm just
randomly in the middle
of the
movie.
Imagining a weird musical Storm, like, pop dance where she's throwing lightning from the air as she walks towards Sabretooth or something. And then, like...
Yeah. Sweet, sweet medicine, baby. see, she shouldn't have been Storm. They should have just made her like a superhero called Glitter.
I mean, she could. There.
Because we all know how amazing that movie was.
Well, there is Dazzler. Dazzler's a pop star in the X-Men universe, but that's
there
a deep
you go.
Cut, so.
Anyway, this week we are looking back at July 2000 when the movies in theaters were The Perfect Storm, Scary Movie, The Patriot, Me, Myself, and Irene, and of course our movie for today, X-Men. Which earned $296.3 million on a $75 million budget. I really, X-Men, what was I doing?
Hank X-Men. Man, Me, Myself, and Irene, that is another classic. I love that movie so much. Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to be hit with spoilers like lightning bolts from Chris's fingertips, then please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So this week I have 7 taglines that appear on the poster for this movie, but we've got a lot of very similar themes going on here. So I'll fire off a couple here. First one is Evolution Begins, and the second one is Join the Evolution.
I get it. It's like a play on revolution. That's good.
Yeah, okay. You know, just some...
Yeah.
They have, like, key words that they've got up on the whiteboard in their writer's room somewhere, and they're just moving it around and just trying to figure out, okay, what else can we do with evolution?
Evolution Begins is fucking stupid, though.
Yeah?
Well, that... It's always been... Well, fucking!
It's like
what they mean?
Evolution continues.
that would have made more sense, but it would have been even stupider. I admit, but
evolution takes it up a notch.
It's like finally, God has taken a step into the backseat, and we can begin evolving.
What was the second one?
Join the evolution.
I was gonna say, not evolution begins. I agree with Chris. Is dumb. They could have went with the next evolution.
There we go. Yeah,
you could have had the big X.
Big X. Yes. Like...
Bing.
Done.
There you go. I wonder if Evolution Begins is a play again on revolution.
Yeah.
Revolution Begins makes more sense, but
yeah.
Also, looking at evolution on the screen there, it doesn't look right. The word evolution just looks weird.
X-Men Evolution, the cartoon series, also came out around the same time as this movie.
Mm.
So maybe they were just like on a real evolution branding branding kick.
They're spreading the conspiracy to the masses that we evolved somehow from monkeys. Prove it.
Okay. Number three, we're not what you think. So written from the X-Man's point of view.
The X-Man, the common, the layman X-Man.
Yeah.
Sure.
Number four, the future is here.
These just aren't, like, creative. Aren't there, like, random blurbs on the front of X-Men comics that we could have snatched from? Like,
they should have picked, like,
suck.
They should have welcome to an uncanny adventure or,
Snickety
know, like,
Snick.
Yeah, Snickety
yeah,
Snick.
Yeah, Snicked just at the bottom, just Snicked.
Okay, well, these last few I like to call, this is the Fear Trilogy. So here we go. Number five, trust a few, fear the rest. Number six is protecting those who fear them. And the seventh is the time is coming when all that we are afraid of will be all that can save us.
That one's way too fucking wordy. I already lost interest like a third of the way through that sentence.
You know what's funny? Like, I think that trust a few, fear the rest is probably the best one.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting from all these taglines is that, and I'm remember, like, this is an era where Hollywood had no idea what comic books were about.
Yeah.
Like, these, whoever is making these taglines, I feel like clearly does not know the X-Men.
Well, and this particular script was clearly making a bunch of references and allegories to actual political and socio things, you know, like issues. And so, like, none of these are leaning into that aspect, the political aspect.
Well, I was going to say it randomly made, like, weird connections to, like, the war on terror, almost.
Yeah.
So the trust a few, fear the rest kind of fits.
I kind of like protecting those who fear them. I don't think that's too bad.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I think that the X-Men has always been kind of, I don't know if this is the right word, but allegorical to, like, race affairs in America.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Magneto is the perfect example of kind of that allegory. He's a Holocaust survivor.
Well, and I mean, now you can tie it to all these other things that it is as well, where it's, you know, like, gay rights and things like that. Like, it's not just race. There's, you know, they've brought so much more social justice into the comics. But none of these taglines, like, follow that route.
Yeah.
And of course, none of them may not be very good descriptions of this movie.
You
so let's
say
go
that again.
Huh?
Said, so do you want to take another stab?
No,
at that
I was happy with that one. But you stumbled. But all of those, you know, with all of those taglines, they may also not be very good descriptions of this movie. So let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
There you go. In one.
This is one of, like, the hardest ones I've ever had to do because in my world, like, the idea of explaining the X-Men is, like, explaining the sky.
Just
like,
got to do the movie, not the X-Men. You just got to explain
like,
the movie.
My gut was just to be like, it's the X-Men, duh, and then just leave it at that. Okay. After her mutant powers manifest during a makeout sesh, young Marie, a.k.a. Rogue, runs away to Canada, where she makes friends with a snarling cage brawler named Logan, a.k.a. the Wolverine, after he reveals himself to also be a mutant while intimidating some local rednecks. Seeking to align herself with a protector, Marie stows away in Logan's truck. When he sniffs her out, he at first resolves to leave her on her own, but eventually he softens and lets her tag along. Shortly after, they are attacked by a bad mutant called Sabretooth, but then are saved by good mutants called Cyclops and Storm, and then whisked away to a school for mutants run by good mutant leader Charles Xavier. Logan also has a run-in with Jean Grey, the girlfriend of Cyclops, and a love triangle ensues. Meanwhile, bad mutant leader Magneto is hatching a plan to turn all the world's leaders into mutants so they can't hate them anymore, and decides to test it on Senator Robert Kelly, America's most pervasive anti-mutant voice. His mutant-making machine kind of works, but also mostly just kills Senator Kelly as well. Magneto realizes running the machine may also kill him, and so he resolves to kidnap Rogue and use her power-stealing powers to give her his powers so she can run the machine and possibly die while he can remain alive to lead all the new mutants into the promised land. Now it's up to the X-Men to stop Magneto and save Rogue and the world leaders before it's too late! And that's your 60-second synopsis.
I just want to say you said Canada. It clearly says Northern Alberta, Canada. Thank you very much. I'd like to specify.
There you go.
Yeah, well, you know, not only that, but it actually says Laughlin City, which is unfortunately a fictional city.
I was going to say it doesn't, yeah.
The closest name when I Googled it was McLaughlin, which is over by Lloydminster and not in the mountains. So, yes, this is, it may be Northern Alberta, but it is unfortunately a fictional city.
Lame.
Lame. That's right.
Why couldn't they have been in Lloydminster?
I mean, to me, it looks like they're as far north of Alberta as you could be. Yeah. Like past Slave Lake. Like, yeah. Maybe, like, high level.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's snowy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, X-Men. I mean, you know, this is one of the ones that kind of kicked off the whole comic book revolution with Marvel.
Yeah, it was Spider-Man before this.
Yeah, so it's, you know,
or
like...
after?
After.
No, before.
No, Spider-Man was 2001.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Okay, so this one did kick it off.
Yeah, because they had to remove a World Trade Center scene from
Spider-Man.
Right,
yes. Right.
So, I mean, you know, like, you do have the other movies that came before it, but this was the first time that we ever got an ensemble movie. Now, I was excited as shit for this movie, but I wasn't really an X-Men reader growing up. I leaned more towards DC, and I did read a series called Excalibur, which was Marvel, which is basically a spin-off of X-Men. It's like their British version. It still had it had Phoenix was one of the characters, and Nightcrawler. I always loved Nightcrawler, but it was like Captain Britain was the leader of that. So, I mean, these X-Men, I didn't really have, you know, that big fondness going in. So I didn't really care that they were in black leather, and I didn't really care that Wolverine was a tall guy. I was just excited to see an ensemble superhero movie. And I remember, you know, it mostly paid off. I mean, it's a pretty cool movie. But compared to some of the things that we have seen since, it's like, oh, wow, this is so basic in a way. I feel there is a very simplicity to it.
It's a lot smaller than I remember it being when I was younger.
Fucking loved it, because I don't know about anybody else, but I feel a teensy bit of a Marvel burnout at this point. Like, I am excited to see what they do next.
I'm with you.
But all these movies, they blend into one at this point, and I'm just in it because I've been in it for so fucking long.
That's why I keep watching The Simpsons. I mean,
exactly. Yeah,
I've stuck with it this long. I might as well go till the end if that ever happens.
But this movie fucking rocked. I watched it an hour ago. I have drank a few. It's Friday, so but that shouldn't play into my reaction at all. This movie fucking was awesome. Like, it doesn't hold your hand at all. It explains a few things to you, but for the most part, it kind of just throws you into it, and I fucking loved it.
Okay,
and...
well, now you're really jumping the gun, because, like, you know what we thought of the movie usually comes after we discuss the movie, so I'm gonna throw you on like a different tangent here. And
you were talking all this bad stuff, and I loved it.
Okay, well, anyway, what is your history with this movie, though?
With this movie?
Yeah.
Well, funny, because while watching it, it's, like, kind of scary. But I remember watching it very young, and but at the same time, I wonder if I was actually, like, I actually did watch it when I was young, because I don't do well with scary movies. And a lot of these, like, there was a lot of moments in this movie where I was like, God, I don't know if younger me would have actually held up watching this scene. Like, it's kind of... like, especially the start of it, it's just like it like sets it up like a horror movie almost. Like,
yeah, I guess so. Yeah, the whole Auschwitz opening.
The Auschwitz opening, and then Rogue like killing her boyfriend almost, and then it immediately jumps into a scene where, it's just it
like
starts
how they
off very
scary.
I like
how they get the line in there at one point, though, saying that, you know, he was in a coma for 3 weeks. You know, we want to make sure that we know that he wasn't one of the body tally.
But fuck, could you imagine that, like, happening? Like, you just, like, all right, yeah, I'm going to kiss a person for the first time or whatever, and then they just die in front of you? Like, ah!
Okay, now...
Well, there's always that story about the girl one of the guy had like a peanut allergy, and the girl had just ate like a peanut butter sandwich, and they made out, and he like went into anaphylactic shock and died.
Oh my!
That's a real story, wow. Which is kind of almost like this X-Men situation.
Ah, yeah, dude, fuck.
I suppose so. Now, outside of the movie universe of X-Men, do you have a lot of experience with the X-Men?
I mean, I have seen, like, the cartoon and stuff like that, but...
Not like, really a reader.
I read a few, especially, like, you gave me those... I've read the Excalibur comics. I don't want to drop any big bombs or anything, but I'd like to say I have some comic book cred. I know quite a bit. I've read a few things. I've read a couple issues of, like, or a couple... I forget which run of Uncanny X-Men I read. It was a newer one for sure, but...
Okay, so a little bit.
I've read a little bit. I know about the X-Men. Okay. Yeah.
Colin, now, what about you? What is your history with X-Men the movie and with, you know, X-Men as a comic book property?
I mean, I guess I've never touched on this on the show, but the X-Men are my comics. Like, I've read X-Men from the time I was, like... X-Men is the first comic that I ever, like, read monthly.
Okay.
From the time that I was, like, in junior high to basically, like, the present day. Like, I don't collect single issues anymore, but I still read, like, the collected trade editions from, I get them from the library and that kind of stuff. And so I'm pretty up on, like, you know, all the happenings comics-wise with the X-Men and Wolverine specifically. Those are kind of the two I never wavered in. And so, like, obviously with the movies... I've seen every single one. I've watched this movie probably, you know, in the hundreds, like probably in the hundreds of times.
Yeah.
I remember going to watch it in my small town movie theater the month it came out and being super stoked for it. Loved the cartoon back in the day, so I love the X-Men. I can't really overstate it.
Now, you mentioned Wolverine. Is Wolverine your guy then?
Well, I mean, I would say so. I have a tattoo of Wolverine here on my right shoulder. So,
okay.
That was the first tattoo I ever got, and So yeah, I'd say Wolverine, like Batman and Wolverine, have always been my two main superheroes, but Wolverine probably takes the number one position.
Okay. Now, well, let's jump into X-Men, because I have a follow-up question, but we might as well, like, actually get the show officially going. Directed by Bryan Singer, produced by Laura Shuler Donner and Ralph Winter, and shout-out to executive producers Stan Lee, Avia Rod, Richard Donner, and associate producer Kevin Feige. And written by Tom DeSanto, Bryan Singer, and David Hayter, who we spoke about as one of the writers on Scorpion King. And so, now, follow-up question when it comes to Wolverine. How did you feel about the Wolverine choice in this movie? Because, you know, there are some of the people that wanted the short, stocky guy, or there's, you know...
I mean, it seems ridiculous now because, like, Hugh Jackman is just synonymous with Wolverine. Like, nobody would ever question it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember really caring when I was that young. I just remember thinking it was fucking awesome that an X-Men movie got created. Okay. And I was, like, you know, I was 2000. I would have been, like, 13 or 14. So, like, you know... Now I feel like people are, like, a little bit more, you know, well, it's not, and I'm not comic accurate or blah, blah. But, I mean, at that time, there wasn't a whole MCU and DCEU. There was, like, Blade and, like, any actual superhero movie pre-X-Men was, like, camp and, you know...
Batman.
Like, just Batman, yeah. Like, not, it just wasn't... It just wasn't great, you know? Like, it never really... There was just always something very much lacking in those movies. And I think, like, yeah, Hugh Jackman is obviously, like, he's not the stocky Wolverine that you see in the comics. But, yeah, I didn't care. I was just happy to see Wolverine on the screen.
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, while I watched it, I was like... I was watching, I was like... I thought of that controversy or whatever, and I was like... it would have been cool to see him shorter, but at the end of the day, like, Hugh Jackman did just do such a good job, and I fully agree. Like, yeah, he's just totally synonymous with the character. Like, yeah, it's hard to, like, think of.
Imagine a Danny DeVito Wolverine.
Well, I was gonna say there were a lot of weird casting choices for this, weren't there?
You know, if they were to recast Wolverine for the MCU moving forward, I think they should give Charlie Day a shot.
That'd be interesting. His voice is. It's impossible. Tom Hardy for a bit, but Tom Hardy's kind of a dick.
I was going to say, for me, it's Tom Hardy or Taron Egerton. I could get on board with Daniel Radcliffe, but that's about it. Like, I can't get on board with Charlie Day. And I also say, like,
I say cast a nobody.
At the time, like, and my opinion on Wolverine is that his stature has really nothing to do with him, like, even
he's
in the
a
comic
model for all our short kings out there, Colin.
Even in the comic books, there are times where his actual stature is kind of, like, dubious. Like, there are some artists that draw him, like, really, like, short.
Yeah,
but, like, in the more modern day, he's more often, like, average height. Like, he's definitely not below average height. And I would always say, like, Wolverine's thing is less about his height and more about his just overall attitude. Like, if Hugh Jackman hadn't been able to capture the attitude of Wolverine, then I think there would have been a problem, but I think he does it well. So
the person that was originally cast was Dougray Scott, who had a scheduling conflict with Mission Impossible 2. He was the bad guy in that,
right? Yes.
I'd always heard that Russell Crowe was offered the role, and he turned it down.
The director really wanted Russell Crowe as well, and he turned it down. And that had something to do with he didn't want to do a superhero movie. And then, of course, he's Jor-El at some point. There was also...
And Zeus.
Zeus. And there was also Viggo Mortensen, Mel Gibson, Aaron Eckhart, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Edward Norton, Bob Hoskins, Keanu Reeves, Gary Sinise, and my favorite, Nick Offerman.
Oh.
Ron Swanson.
Wow, I would have paid good money to see a Nick Offerman Wolverine. I feel like that would have changed his entire career.
Yeah, easily. Yeah. So we open this movie with the Fox logo, which I like that the X lingers for a moment. It just stays glowing on the screen for an extra second when this logo goes away. And we get the quick voiceover bringing us up to speed on mutations from Sir Patrick Stewart and the weird CGI credits quickly. And then we cut to the what we mentioned earlier, the Auschwitz in Poland 1944 opening. And yeah, this movie has a really dark opening, like Chris says.
Yeah, and I loved it. I love anything like alternate history related. Big history nerd, so anything like just playing on history is very fun. I love the... Just the idea of giving a person powers in like a concentration camp, like that's just so. And his character, it's just, it gives him kind of perfect motivation for everything he could possibly do, which he does some fucked up shit. But again, you're like, he's got kind of a good reason
nature
for
over
it.
Nurture, yeah.
He was at one point carted off as an individual of a certain group and shown what could possibly happen, like. Kind of justified a little bit.
It immediately lends a gravity to the movie that I don't think a lot of superhero movies even today do well.
Yeah.
It perfectly sets up Magneto as, yeah, he is the villain, but you can easily understand why he is doing everything that he is doing.
Yeah.
You can easily see that he's trying to avoid another genocide.
Yeah, motivation of his instantly people. Like, clear.
Just boom.
And even though you have to like root against him because he's the villain, you still have kind of a sympathy for him, which I like.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And so we cut to Meridian, Mississippi, and I realized it's been a little while since I've watched this movie. You know, the other MCU took over my life so much that I don't revisit these movies as much as I should. But I kind of forgot that this whole movie kind of takes place through the eyes of Rogue at first. Yeah. Right? Like, she's the one that brings us into this world. And I kind of forgot about that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's been forever since I've seen the first X-Men, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you have a favorite in the franchise, either of you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I would say it's probably, like, of the X-Men movies, or, like, are you including the Wolverine? I liked
X-Men universe, yeah. Like, I guess Deadpool could be included in there as well.
Well, then Deadpool, first of all, but then, like, First Class and Logan are up there for sure.
Okay, so you like the young ones and the solos, okay.
I would say that Logan is the best X-Men universe movie by far.
Yeah.
I think the best like X-Men titled movie is Days of Future Past. It's the most satisfying because it like has all the characters.
Yeah.
And I honestly think if they had just left it there, it would have been perfect. Like in my heart of hearts, I wish they had never made Apocalypse or Dark Phoenix because the ending of Days of Future Past when Logan opens the door and sees like all the shit from like The Last Stand has been like erased is the perfect ending for that franchise, and it should have just stopped there and like but whatever.
For sure.
I also really like this one though too. I think they're all mostly good. The one it's easier for me to say which ones are the worst. Mm-hmm. Like Dark Phoenix is clearly the worst. The Last Stand is like the second, and then Apocalypse.
Yeah. I mean, like, because I'm so partial to Nightcrawler, I really like the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah. X2 is great because this movie still has like your origin thing that you kind of always have to get through with these superhero mm-hmm. franchises. X2 is nice because it's just off to the races.
Yeah.
And the story is really good. And yeah, I like Nightcrawler as well. So it's sweet to have him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unfortunate they didn't really bring him. Or he is in one of the like younger class ones.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, yeah. I barely remember the newer ones. I've seen them far less times.
I've never seen Dark Phoenix just because I know it's bad.
Yeah, it's I remember watching it and thinking, like, they basically somehow managed to just do The Last Stand over again, and we all know that that movie was garbage.
Well, yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
But then they did it worse.
So after Rogue almost kills her boyfriend and starts screaming at her parents not to touch her, great on Anna Paquin. I feel like Anna Paquin, though, was the biggest star in this movie when this movie came out. I mean, everyone else was kind of, like, sort of known.
That's true,
really.
Actually, yeah.
Because Anna Paquin had an Oscar.
Did she?
Yeah, for The Piano. She won that when she was, like, 13 or something like that.
Wow, I wonder what it's like to win the biggest award so young.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I found watching this movie is, like, for the longest time, the X-Men were kind of caught in their powers, for lack of a better word. And it was, like, just kind of after around this time where in the comics they started to, like, change things. Like, the best example is Wolverine. Like, Wolverine from, like, I don't know, whenever he came in, like, the 1970s to 2000, his whole thing was he was this guy who, like, had no memory of who he was, and that was, like, never, ever going to change. And so around this time they made the Origin miniseries where they, like, go into his past, and that's why the Alberta thing shows up here, because that's where that comes from, like that comic book series.
Yeah.
But then shortly after this movie comes out, they do away with all that, and he gets his memories back, and they go forward. And it's kind of the same with Rogue. Like, if you watch the cartoon show, Rogue's like entire story arc is all about like how she can't touch anything, and basically her and Gambit can't get it on. Yeah. And then that's what kind of plays into this movie as well, is like that's just her whole thing. And eventually she learns how to. The only one who doesn't really change is Cyclops. Cyclops never learns how to control his laser blast without his visor.
Yeah. Yeah, so we cut to Jean Grey, who is giving a, at the Capitol building, she's giving a speech about mutant evolution. But Senator Kelly wants to know, are mutants dangerous? I mean, that's all this is about. So, I mean, we get right into politics right off the beginning. Mutant Registration Act and all that.
Did you guys find, like, I actually thought what Senator Kelly is talking about is more relevant today than it would have been then.
Well, yeah.
Like, I'm just, like he's talking about, like, mutants in our schools and stuff, which you could, like, compare to school shootings. Yeah, Columbine had happened before this, but, like, nothing else. And now, like, you see the history that's occurred after this movie came out, and it all seems way more relevant what he's talking about compared to then.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. I said the exact same thing when I was watching it. What is it? I'm trying to find my note. Sorry. There's just so much chicken scratch on this page. Fuck it, whatever. Dangers in our school or something. But I just wanted to say it's not at all how the Senate like looks or functions.
Yeah, no.
Like he can just randomly call out and shit. Like maybe it was his questioning period, but you're not allowed to interrupt people. Like there's a person there with a hammer that stops you from interrupting people.
Like a certain amount of time?
Yeah, exactly.
Like even your responses you have like 10 seconds or whatever to like say or ask your question or
whatever. Each senator has a certain amount of time to ask questions. They're only allowed to ask a certain amount of questions. And this whole building is set up like it's like a UN Security Council meeting, and there's like risers and there's an audience in there watching like it's a trial, like it's a Senate committee.
All the rules go out the window when mutants are involved.
None of it made sense. The whole time in that scene I was like, what's going on? This isn't what the whole politics part of it took me out of it.
Yeah,
weirdly enough. It's just like
is Professor Xavier also an important person?
Maybe.
I get the sense that he's under the radar. Like, that people don't... Like, I was trying to think about... Later on, Robert Kelly mentioned... He's talking, like, about mutants, and he says something like, you know, people like this Jean Grey. But in this scene, I don't know that he knows she's a mutant or not. Yeah. Like, or if she's just an advocate for mutants. But it seems to me like Professor X is not really well-known...
Yeah,
necessarily at this
point.
But
is he important enough that he can easily be one of the people allowed in the audience of this thing?
I imagine he just is low-key, like Colin said, and if anybody kind of questions what the old dude's doing in the corner, he's like, Jedi mind tricks them away.
I did feel, for whatever reason, more than any other time I've watched this, I noted that there's a lot of like chess reference throughout the entirety of this movie. Like the whole thing is almost a giant chess match. Like even when like first they're talking about chess or whatever, and then later, you know, Magneto's like, oh, I've made the first move, and then it ends with them playing chess.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was just me trying to read into things too much, but...
Well, and the interesting thing is neither of those actors knew how to play chess before this movie was made. They hired a chess master to come in and teach them how to play chess.
Nice.
Yeah. Which is weird because I'm sure Picard played chess. So, I mean, like, I guess Patrick Stewart was just acting his way through that shit, if I'm remembering Star Trek chess correctly. I mean, they always had the 4D chess or 3D chess or
3D
whatever.
Chess, yeah. It's also weird. The first time those two come on screen, I just thought to myself, like, they look so young, but they're still clearly old.
The first time Magneto, like old Magneto, is introduced, I loved it. He's like a movie monster. Like you don't see his face or anything like that, and then finally you see it, and like half of it is shade, like he's conflicted or whatever. Like that was a good scene. I loved it.
Yeah, and I love the ambiguous lines between good and evil with the X-Men. Like that's one thing that's always nice, is that it's like you never know who's fighting for whom. Like it's Yeah.
And to Chris's earlier point, I do really love that this movie, compared to most superhero origin movies, does you no favors if you're not really a fan of the X-Men, because like some things that they say are so loaded with history that I don't think any layperson would necessarily know, but they just go with it. They just kind of like expect you to do the work, I guess.
They don't even like let you know that the kid you saw in the Holocaust in the beginning is Magneto until they like flash his tattoo for half a second, his like Auschwitz tattoo.
Yeah.
Like this whole movie, I was just thinking like I've written the word subtle so many times on this page. Like as much as it is an origin story and they do take time to explain a couple things, I mean it starts with narration, but they kind of just throw it at you, and they just expect you to like, they don't hold your hand through it. And I love it.
Yeah. Also, I just have to say the chemistry between Patrick Stewart and Neil Patrick Harris, but no, Ian McKellen,
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
It's It's off the charts. Like, these guys should be doing movies together constantly.
All the time, yeah.
Well, they originally met, like, doing a Shakespeare festival in the 70s or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they're best friends in real life. Yeah.
So they did go way back. And so, yeah, I mean, that would have been fun to act with an old friend, you know?
Yeah.
So we...
I don't even remember where we are.
We end up cutting to... We're in northern Alberta now. Here we go. Rogue has shown up to Laughlin City. And this is where we finally get to meet our Wolverine. However, I do want to say that she is dropped off in a Liberty Trucking Company truck, which is an actual company, and I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, X-Men is brought to you by Ford and Cadillac, Pepsi and Mountain Dew, Liberty Trucking, Molson Export, for some reason. Why aren't they drinking Canadian in Canada? And Oakley sunglasses.
Oakleys. Do you guys remember it? Like, maybe Chris is too young, but I remember Oakleys being like...
Oh, they were the shit.
You would chop off your arm to get a pair of Oakleys.
Yeah. Plus the possibly fictional Sabret hot sausage and Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
You missed a Pepsi sponsorship. There was totally a Pepsi vending machine, and it was the only thing lit up in that. I think it was when they were fighting in
Yeah, I said Pepsi and Mountain Dew.
Oh,
I was going to say, this is unprecedented.
No, Pepsi and Mountain Dew. I said it. Totally. Go back and check the tape.
It was so short compared to other ones that it just like blew by.
This is where I'm going to like insert a little clip of me just a few minutes ago saying that. Ford and Cadillac, Pepsi and Mountain Dew, Liberty Trucking. Yeah.
Pepsi.
No, it was a very short one. That's for sure. Absolutely. So yeah, Rogue meets Wolverine, and he's in the middle of a bunch of cage fights, and he, you know, the guy that's fighting Wolverine is told not to hit him in the balls. But I thought you say anything goes. Yeah, but he'll take that one personally. Ironically, though, there was one point in this film where Hugh Jackman ended up pinching his testicles in a harness doing a jump down in one of the Statue of Liberty scenes. Yeah, so
that sounds unpleasant.
I'm sure he took it personally. Well, he had a whole process apparently for Wolverine, because his first day of filming, his hot water went out and he had to take a cold shower. And he didn't want to wake his wife, so like he had to try to fight his way through it, and he found that it made him angry. And so he's like, I'm going to take that to the character. That's what I want to take to this character. It's amazing how small he is, though, in this movie.
I know. I was watching and I was like, he's in really good shape still.
Yeah.
But he's not in, like, Wolverine shape that we know him to be now.
He's not vascular. And I mean, apparently he only had like 2 weeks to train before they started filming. So that's why his appearance is different at different points in the movie. Because, like, as he was getting buffer, he's buffer in some scenes that were filmed later. But yeah, so I guess that's what he's done ever since, though, with Wolverine, is he takes a cold shower in the morning to get ready for his day.
Nice.
Yeah. So Wolverine kicks a whole bunch of ass, and then, like, Rogue is sitting at the bar talking to him when the guys come up and say that they were cheated out of their money. And the most un-Canadian thing happens in this Canadian bar when the bartender pulls a gun on Wolverine. I've always disliked that moment. I'm like, that's not the Canadian reaction.
Yeah, they should have been like, hey, take it outside there, eh?
Yeah.
Like, that should have been something like
that. Why don't you just split a poutine, eh? Yeah.
I also love when Wolverine's fighting, they're playing like metal noises.
Yeah.
Like when he hits the dude's fist, it goes ting.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And they do eventually explain that his bones are coated in metal or whatever. But like, I again, very subtle with it. They throw you right into it before they explain it to you. It's like you can kind of pick up like, oh, dude's got metal in him. And then eventually he shows his claws and you're like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that scene. I love when he has like the two claws with the one in the middle coming out. It's just so epic.
Yeah.
Yeah, still very cool. Yeah, I'm always disappointed though that they retconned this whole story with Sabretooth when they made the Wolverine movies, because I kind of wish that Sabretooth knew him in this movie when he, you know, later on when he comes across him in the road.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, I thought that Sabretooth did know Wolverine.
They're brothers!
Well, exactly. But the fact that he, like, lets Wolverine regenerate or whatever, like, if I were Sabretooth and I knew that fucker was coming back, like, I'd be on him before he was, like, getting up and stuff.
Yeah.
He just, like, pushes that tree into their truck and then goes, I'm going to wait till he gets up and lumbers back to the car, and then I'll throw him through a tree. Show that bastard what.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that the only major failure to me in this movie is not adding more depth to the relationship of Sabretooth and Wolverine. Mm-hmm. Like, even though Wolverine Origins, like, that movie is not the greatest, I do love Liev Schreiber as Sabretooth, and I like that relationship in that movie. Mm. And you're right, Sean, like, it just would have added so much more to have that aspect be more involved in X-Men, where, like, you know, Wolverine's like, even if he's like, I kind of, like, watching it this time was like, I don't really like that he just is like ignoring it. Like, I don't like that they don't, maybe like Tyler Mayne wasn't a good actor or something. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't like that Sabretooth never says anything to him.
Well, would,
like,
their other choice of Kevin Nash been better?
Yes. Big Sexy, bring it on. Like, but yeah, I just felt like that was missing. And the whole idea, like, they set up like Magneto's after Wolverine, but you didn't really need that. I would have just liked to see, and it would have made the fight, I think, between Sabretooth and Wolverine on the Statue of Liberty at the end even more compelling. If there was some recognition of possible relationship, like, this guy knows who I am, but I don't know who I am, so, like, I need you to tell me how you know me. Like, that should have been more at play in this movie.
Well, yeah, the first movie, I find that the bad guy characters are kind of done a little dirty.
Yeah.
Like, except for Magneto, they're not really fleshed out at all. They're just henchmen.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's one thing that, yes, it would be nice if you married the cousins a little bit in this movie, you know, mm-hmm. got those ties a little bit tighter, like they do in the future movies, where it's like, oh, okay, you know, now that's where we really start getting the ambiguous good versus evil ties.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rogue is stowing away, and I still love the scene. I don't know what it is about the shot of Wolverine just getting launched through the window and sliding, you know, like 100 feet, that it gets me every time. There's something I love about that. I don't know why.
It's the funnest thing to do in GTA is just ram your car into a wall and watch your guy go 30 feet.
Yeah, I found that also, that, like, with the special effects, the healing special effects were still pretty good. Like, for 2000 special effects, they're still pretty good.
The special effects in this movie were pretty stellar, honestly. Like,
they
hold up for a how old 22-year-old movie. Like, God, good. And they did a lot of practical effects. Like, I watched a behind-the-scenes thing because I was like, some of this shit's gotta be real. Like, it's too early for CG, like, how they ripped that train apart.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to, but they ripped that fucking train apart. They just did it.
Yeah.
The only effect I thought was weirdly didn't hold up was Cyclops' blast.
Really?
It looked like a phone effect.
Yeah, it's like a filter. Like,
yeah, see, I found a couple of the Mystique changes rough.
Yeah. The ones when she's jumping in the air, because it's like they must have had to do like a double or something for her. I mean, like a CGI double.
Well, one thing I did read, though, that I found absolutely hilarious is there's a scene shortly after Mystique, disguising herself as Iceman, convinces her to leave. There's a scene where Sean Ashmore walks by and then the elevator opens and Sean Ashmore comes out. And apparently this was a very complicated, difficult shoot and editing and everything like that to figure out how to make this camera trick work. And then, like, after they had already filmed it, that's when Bryan Singer found out that Sean Ashmore has a twin brother. It's like, they could have just hired his brother and, like, saved him, like, you know, hours.
Yeah. That part was done. Because they, like, they flash the Mystique eyes on him after he's done talking with Rogue. And then they have to 5 minutes later do... Because I was like... I was so on board with how this movie was being very subtle with all its stuff, and then it has to, like, bonk you over the head with that, and it's like, oh, come on. I thought you trusted us, and you have to show us them in the same cut. One guy walking by, and then him coming out. It's like, oh, they are different people. Okay, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea when...
His eyes turned yellow.
Yeah.
I guess he could have been hypnotized or something, but... I mean, come on. That was...
Yeah, we haven't established hypnosis in this universe
yet. If it took them a while to do, I hope it costs a lot of money, because that scene could have easily been cut, and fuck them. That's stupid.
Okay, so now where were we? Oh, so Storm and Cyclops show up to save the day, and they end up taking Wolverine back to the mansion.
Yeah, I love that they're just on random road in northern Alberta all of a sudden, because I guess their Sabretooth app notified them.
They must have been Cerebroed, right?
I guess.
Yeah, that's the ultimate find my friend right there.
And the Blackbird does, it's like super fast or whatever, so it can get everywhere really quick, but right?
Yeah.
Still, it's a
little New York
odd.
To Alberta. Yeah, that, what, 10 minutes in that thing?
Well, that thing goes really fast. It's a comic book.
I mean, in my mind, I feel like, you know, Professor X somehow, like, they've been tracking the movements of Magneto's henchmen, so, like, maybe there's something to that, but
Magneto makes to make them all helmets.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, why not?
Welcome to the team, here's your uniform, a Magneto helmet.
Makes so much sense. Like, why the fuck not? I've never, ever, ever thought of that before. Why doesn't all of the Brotherhood have Magneto helmets if it blocks his... Jesus.
So yeah, we get to meet Jean Grey. So we've already met Halle Berry, and we get to meet Jean Grey, who is the other Bond girl. Two of the people have gone on to be Bond girls. Yeah, he wakes up when she tries to draw blood. I always wonder about the stunt of sticking a needle in your arm in a movie. Is it just a retractable needle? Is it like the old trick that you would do with like a mechanical pencil where you're pretending to stick it in your arm?
It's like those fake knives you get where it all goes into the handle when you stab someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must be.
Yeah. But Wolverine goes running out into the hall, and he just pulls the pin out and throws it aside. I mean, someone could step on that, Wolverine. That's so inconsiderate.
I like how when Wolverine, after he's like he's grabbing Jean by the throat, but he doesn't like really bother to ask like any questions.
Yeah.
He's just kind of strangling her, looking around, and then lets go and runs away.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you keep a hostage maybe if you felt like you were truly afraid that you might not make it out?
Possibly.
I think he's got hospital PTSD was my take on the whole thing, because he's got the whole Weapon X subconscious in him. So he's like, oh, fuck, I woke up and there's needles in me. I gotta get out of here now.
Yeah. But going back to like Chris's idea of this being a horror movie, this is where we start getting the mind fuckery from Charles, you know, this way, over here. So yeah. Creepy.
Yeah, why couldn't you just be nice and just be like, relax? Like,
yeah.
do some calming mind meditation to Logan instead of just toying with him.
Come down the hall, three doors on the left.
Yeah. You are safe.
Just don't spooking worry. Him into each corner until he gets there.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you make him, like, you know, like, come into this room where you're sitting around all cash with a bunch of students, and it's like, now what the fuck? So, I mean, the end game doesn't even match the things that went on in your head to get you there.
I'll leave this up to Colin. Do you think the girl in that class in the yellow coat with the sunglasses on her head was a Jubilee reference, or was that just...
It 100% is.
I do. Because
her glasses aren't really pink, though. They're kind of just black, normal glasses.
No, I think based on look, it's Jubilee. But I was also kind of annoyed. I totally forgot that they introduced Kitty Pryde.
Right, yeah, they recast her.
In this movie,
yeah.
only to, like, reintroduce her later on with Elliot Page.
Yeah.
I don't know. That is the one problem of the X-Men movies. That's the thing that really did them wrong. Was like
not planned
the
out.
Lack the just total disregard for continuity.
Yeah, they should have had a little bit more foresight. I mean, the amount of characters that were supposed to appear in this movie that didn't, just through all the different versions of the scripts that have existed. I mean, you know, Beast was left out until the second movie, and Nightcrawler was one that floated around. Jubilee was supposed to have more of a part. So was Gambit. Gambit was supposed to make an appearance. I mean, it was just like, you know, there were so many different versions, and it's like, this is the group they settled on for this movie.
It's a good group.
I remember being so choked in the second one that you get to see, like, Colossus is, like, my other favorite X-Men, and you get to see him for, like, a brief second in the second movie, and then he kind of gets a little bit more play in the third, and obviously he was sweet in Deadpool too, but
yeah.
I mean I guess like I'm sure there was like budgetary reasons for why, but I do wish like the X-Men as a team would have been a little bit more fleshed out and established, and then you have Wolverine join it as like kind of the last piece. Like, it's nice having Cyclops and Storm, but I wish there was like at least two more, like a Beast and you have Jean, but like a Beast or an Angel, even like they bring Angel in later kind of lamely. But
I like that scene though, that Angel scene where he's like cutting off his wings and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we get shown around the mansion that we have seen in everything from Smallville to Arrow to Billy Madison. You know, a montage of all the different people that have their powers, and you know. I guess there's, like, I think it's the basketball scene with the basketball that blows up. That's supposed to make you think that Gambit is there, I suppose. But that's about it. There was a part of me that always felt a little cheated at all these side characters that they teased us with. But you didn't get to see any of them, because Kitty Pryde was also one that I knew from Excalibur. She was also in that one, Shadowcat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I remember I was always disappointed by that with this movie, but meh.
Yeah.
Iceman freezes fire.
Yeah.
Sorry, that just
seems scientifically impossible.
there's liquid and fire to be frozen. But yeah. All right. How, and their rival, they also, one thing we talking about Kitty Pryde being recast, they recast, what's his face? What's the fire
Pyro.
Guy?
Pyro.
Pyro. They recast Pyro. Is it in the next one?
Yeah. It's for sure in the third one because he plays, like, he joins the Brotherhood in that one. But I think
he
does show up a little bit in the second one.
But why is he such a rival if we can just fucking freeze whatever fireball he throws at us? Like,
yeah.
That really took me out of it, watching him freeze a fireball. And it's a perfectly, like, ice fireball in his hand after that. Like, it doesn't blow out or anything like I expect it to. It just froze into a ball. It's like, what?
Well, the only thing I can think of is they weren't sure about X-Men. And so, like, they actually gave it a bit of a smaller budget than you would expect. Like, the $75 million budget is a little lower than you would expect for a movie like this. And so... that's what I can think maybe it is they wanted to make sure that you knew, no, we know that these other characters exist, but this is all we can afford for CGI is freezing this fireball.
Should have just taken the Deadpool route.
Yeah.
Can we only afford two fucking X-Men?
a fact check for me that's something that's always bothered me about Pyro is that, like, in the comic books, Pyro he's pyrokinetic, but he's not actually able to, like, make his own fire. So in the comic books, his costume, like, he actually has, like, a little flamethrower that, like, jets on his wrist uses to spray the fire, and then he can control it.
He has a pilot light.
Yeah, basically.
He's a fire bender.
So we get to see Senator Kelly get abducted by Mystique and Toad. And
oh, sorry. We're at that part.
Well, I don't know. I guess not.
Well, no. Yeah. We're at that part. I was just saying, because I have a note for that. Why is a senator being taken by, like, a Marine One helicopter to somewhere? None of it makes any sense. Like, senators don't just get carted around by military helicopters. Like, that's what a president gets carted around in.
It doesn't even seem like he knows where he's going either.
Yeah, he walks through a crowd of people who are supporting him, I guess, on the tarmac of wherever, and then he gets flown off in a fucking Marine One helicopter. With a green guy flying it. Well, yeah. He was wearing a big old helmet with a visor. We couldn't see him.
That's true, yeah. He just looked like he had jaundice.
It's the green hair that would have given him away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He had that covered up, so...
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I guess Rebecca Romaine Stamos actually kicked him by accident in this scene where she's like, people like you are the reason I was afraid to go to school as a child. And she kicks him, and she accidentally did kick him.
Yeah. I don't really know how to feel about the Mystique costuming in the X-Men movies. Part of me is like, it seems super sexy and it's been very great for cosplay going forward, but like... But also, it's just like, I don't know, it's definitely not kid-friendly.
I watched some behind the scenes and didn't even realize while watching the movie that, like, most of that movie's shot at night. Like, she's out there in night shoots, just in fucking latex. Like, she's got her winter coat wrapped around her shoulders in between takes. And it's so funny, there's this one thing I watched where she's all bundled up in that winter coat, and they go, all right, we gotta start shooting the scene, and she, just the look in her eyes, she's like, oh, fuck, I gotta get rid of this coat, are you kidding me? And like, you could see her breath and stuff. Like, I felt bad. Like, it was like, not terrible outside, but cold outside for sure, especially if you're not wearing anything. My goodness.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and she's like just like, that's all she's wearing. Like, at least when Jennifer Lawrence had to do it, they kept it, but like, she still gets to wear like an X-Men suit. Mm-hmm. Like, really, it's just like her face and stuff that had to be done in makeup. She's never like just completely out like that.
Yeah. Eventually, at least.
Yeah.
So when they kidnap the senator and they've got him like tied up in his chair, there's this part where Toad eats a bird, right?
Yeah.
And then Magneto has the magnificent line when he walks in where, oh, Toad has a wicked tongue, Senator, just like you. So did they rehearse this ahead of time? Like, we're on the way back, were they scheming? Was Magneto like, okay, I'm going to release a bird in there, right? And you're going to eat it, right? And make sure the senator sees this, because I'm going to come in and get this. I'm going to say, you have a wicked tongue.
No. Him and Professor X, they just did improv back in their college days. He's just, he's got a quick wit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he already had another line all ready to go, but when he saw that happen, he's like, I gotta capitalize.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I feel like Magneto has some, like, wicked zingers through this entire movie. Like, my favorite is at the end when they're in the Statue of Liberty and Cyclops tells Storm to fry him. He's like, a bolt of lightning to a metal copper conductor. Don't you go to a school?
Yeah, just that whole scene between him and the senator, like, Ian McKellen, you can just see it on his face. Like, he just loves playing just this over-the-top bad guy. Like, he's fucking reveling in it. He's just, Much camp, so much fun. Like
he actually almost refused because he was cast in Lord of the Rings, and Bryan Singer's like, no, we'll rearrange the schedule to get you shot out in time.
Mm.
And I'm glad they did.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's great in that role. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't think Fassbender will ever be quite the same. You know, like, he does well, but he'll never be Ian McKellen, you know?
Yeah. I like Fassbender and McAvoy in those roles, but to me it's always Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen forever.
Yeah, like, also, like Deadpool says, you know, is it the young ones or the old ones? What
also,
universe
just
are we in?
Old Professor X and old Magneto are like the penultimate versions of their character too. So to play like a younger version of that character, like, it's kind of hard to live up to it just on that fact alone.
Yeah.
Because old Professor X kicks a lot more ass than young Professor X does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think in the older versions, it's probably the fact that they are real-life friends really helps those performances, because that's what really needs to come through. Yeah. Is that at the end of the day, even though they disagree, this is like a message for the world today. Even though we disagree, we can still be friends.
Yep. There you go. I also love some of Wolverine's lines. One of my favorite is when he asks Jean whether putting up with Strahd is her superpower.
I wrote at some point that just I love the rivalry between Cyclops and Wolverine.
The love triangle.
Not even the love triangle, just the rivalry between the two of them. That scene where Cyclops ends it with, oh, and stay away from my girl, and closes the door. Like, just so good. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think another miss for the X-Men franchise is not having the Cyclops-Jean marriage. Like, they really tried to keep that open the whole time. Like, when Cyclops gets axed in The Last Stand, and ultimately it's, like, upon Wolverine to kill the woman he loves, I felt that was a real disservice to Cyclops. That should have been Cyclops' moment.
Yeah, he always kind of ended up getting shifted into the background as the franchise moved on.
Well, that's because James Marsden wasn't, like, liked by the studio or whatever. Like, he was fired for the last one, I thought. They wanted to get rid of his ass.
Hmm.
Well, because Bryan Singer left to go do Superman Returns,
and,
which was coming out at the same time as X-Men The Last Stand. And so Brett Ratner took over, and Bryan Singer hired Marsden to be in Superman Returns. Right. And so that's why they decided to kill him off.
And
in the
studio,
third movie.
Yeah. They felt betrayed, so they got rid of him.
But that is like the big difference between the X-Men movie franchise and the comics is that in the comics, X-Men is the Cyclops story. In the movies, it's the Wolverine story.
Yeah, it definitely is. And he got all the spin-off movies, too. I mean, you remember all the different origin stories that they were going to have at one point. I mean, there was supposed to be a Gambit starring
Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was supposed to be another one too, wasn't there?
There's supposed to be a Magneto one.
Oh, yeah.
They were gonna do like a just a. The reason why X-Men Origins Wolverine is called that is because they were supposed to do more of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like Han Solo.
Yeah.
I remember when the Obi-Wan series was supposed to be a movie. So Logan ends up having a nightmare and then wakes up in a stabby mood and ends up sticking blades right through Rogue's chest. And so she steals his power to heal herself. And we finally get to see what Rogue actually can do other than send her boyfriend into a coma. So, but
yeah.
Why is Rogue in such a non-pajama looking outfit? She's in like a ball gown, right? Whereas, you know, everyone else is in flannel pants and stuff.
She doesn't want to be accidentally touched in the night.
Yeah, but it's sleeveless.
She doesn't want to be fucking touched in the night. I said it already.
I was just thinking, watching this movie with Anna Paquin, it's weird to go back and watch this movie with her after seeing True Blood. I don't know if you guys have watched that, but it's like,
I know there's some nude scenes.
That's a very adult show, and to go back and be like, oh yeah, like, look what she became, look what you did.
Yeah, Yeah. Now go back and watch that one where she raises ducks or geese the or ducks, something.
Oh, yeah. Fly Away Home.
Fly Away Home. Yeah. Hey, there's Jeff Daniels. We were back in speed. We were wondering about a Jeff Daniels movie that's not comedy. There we go. Fly Away Home.
There we go.
I will say, though, that is kind of the perfect way to introduce Rogue's pattern, like Rogue's powers without giving you a random exposition scene.
Yeah.
Like, just, throw that scene. There's
definitely several exposition dumps in this movie, that's for sure.
There's a couple, but if there was an X-Men done nowadays, there'd be 30 fucking more. Like, I guarantee. Like, Cerebro, there's, like, I love it. There's a scene cut, and then it's Professor X rolling down a bridge, and he goes, "Welcome to Cerebro." And, like, then he gets into an explanation, but, like, I feel like nowadays in an X-Men movie, there would have been lead up to it, there would have been a reference from a character, someone would have made a joke in between, and then we would have gotten to the Cerebro explanation before someone actually took a fucking step in the place. Like, that just, scene cut, welcome to Cerebro, helps my powers, let's do the scene. Like, it's just done and over.
You must be a gracious lover. Just kidding.
To the point. That's all I need, man. To the point. Just get it done, and I'm good.
No, I agree. That was one thing watching this movie. I really felt it goes by so fast. Like, it's not a short movie necessarily, but like, it literally just rolls along from one thing to the next. To get from the point where, you know, Rogue meets Wolverine, really to like this point, and then this point basically just sets up the complete end of the movie. Mm-hmm. It just goes by so quick, because I think you're right, like, they don't waste any time actually having to explain anything. Yeah. They just kind of give you the bare minimum that you need to understand where we're going, and they go with it.
The dialogue, like, on it's just perfectly concise. It's just straight to the point. It just, there's no quips in between. Again, I was talking about that Marvel burnout. Like, I do love the fun nature of it, and everybody's joking, and we're all funny, funny guys. But I love that there's like five or six jokes in this, and they're good. They don't make you like belly chuckle or anything, but God, it's just straight to the point. Everybody's lines are for a reason. Any scene that happens, if it's explaining something, like, it does progress the story while explaining what needs to be explained. Like, just well done.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's even like when we are introduced to Cerebro, we found out that Magneto has found out a way to shield himself from it. And he also mentions to Logan that, well, he knows how because he helped me build it. And right there, in just like a few lines, all of a sudden we know that, you know, like, their friendship does go back, and they used to be on the same side or whatever. And like, and Wolverine knows everything he needs to do, and we know why he wears that ridiculous fucking helmet.
I think that's the exact reason I wrote the dialogue is perfectly concise line, because that just happened. It was like half a second of audio, and it's like, oh shit, that explains so much. Okay.
Now, excuse me, let me go to work. Yeah. So, Senator Kelly has been given powers, and he manages to escape by squishing himself through the bars. That was still a pretty good effect with the bulging.
Yeah.
I mean, shout out to that effect. But I still love the moment, like, just even the look on Sabretooth's face when he tries to rescue him, but, you know, Senator Kelly's just too Stretch Armstrong and ends up falling into the ocean. But I just love the look on his face of, I don't know, like, I had him. But then the bar is closing. Like, there's a lot of sight gags like that. Like when Wolverine flips Scott the finger.
That was good.
Except it's the claw.
That's classic. You know?
I wonder if standards and practices with that one, when they were trying to get their rating, they're like, well, it's not a finger. It just implies a finger.
It's funny, too. I watched there was a behind-the-scenes clip of specifically that scene, and he's just got the three claws in, and they just edited out the two. So he just holds up his hand and does a face. It's kind of silly to see it with all three claws in the frame.
Yeah. So Mystique manages to get into the mansion and fuck shit up in Cerebro, and she manages to convince Rogue to run away.
How does she know that?
Confused.
How does she know that Bobby and Rogue are like a thing? Like, how does she know to turn into Bobby to be a dick and that will work? Like,
I don't know. Maybe she's been hiding as like a rock in the garden for a while.
Maybe she was the fake Kitty Pryde.
Oh, there you go.
Because she can take on powers, I guess.
Yeah.
She grows on like those claws and they get cut in half or whatever, and then she grows them back, but...
And she screams. So like, was that part of her skin that she gets cut off?
I guess.
Would that be like skinning your knuckles on... When I scrape my windshield in the winter, I hate when I skin my knuckles on the ice. That's the worst one.
I loved the two Wolverines thing because it's the classic, like, no, I'm him and no, I'm him and shit. But yeah, that weirded me out, the whole claw thing.
Yeah, that was my question too, was like, because when she gets stabbed, like, she clearly has a stab wound.
Mm-hmm.
But when the claws get cut, what is gone from her body now? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if she transforms into a mascot, can you, like, stab all around her without her getting hurt because she's got a mascot skin over her skin?
Or is the mascot skin now her skin?
And she's getting stabbed. The whole thing is bonkers.
Yeah.
I've written down a couple thought experiments, two thought experiments in here. That should have been a thought experiment I wrote down.
But it's also, like, because Mystique can change into, like, things much smaller. Like, technically, like, she could change into, like, a bird or something if she wanted to.
Yeah.
So, like... Say she got cut as a bird. It's just how, like, yeah, I guess the question is, how does the damage transfer to her original form?
Stabbed as a bird with a 2-inch knife in the torso, does it all of a sudden, if you turn into a person, it's like neck to hip?
Yeah. Like, are you just split in half? I don't know. Or is her body kind of just like some weird goo-like material where it just... but then the getting stabbed doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're saying that she's like Blobby from Hotel Transylvania, like that. That's what you're describing is.
Yeah. Or like Clayface from like the Batman.
Yeah, there you
universe.
Go. There we go. So because Rogues run away, they end up finding her at the train station. Thanks to Cerebro, Wolverine has stolen Scott's motorcycle. It seems like it's very difficult for Scott to be inconspicuous with his weird visor on. Like, you'd think they would figure out a way to make one that looks a little bit more normal. Like, I understand that this has the dials and everything to focus his vision, but still, like, you'd think you'd be able to do that with the Oakleys, just so that you could blend in a bit better at the train station.
We haven't invented microchips or whatever in the year 2000. You gotta wait a couple of years.
There's a moment in there where there's the kid in the train station that's like looking up at him and smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently this extra was so infatuated with the X-Men and his favorite was Cyclops that he couldn't stop himself from smiling at Cyclops. So they ended up writing it in, and Bryan Singer's like told the mom, you know, like how to react and everything. But yeah, they just ended up writing it in because this kid could not focus on not being in an X-Men movie.
That's good. When Cyclops blows a hole through the roof, that was like a model, like a 4-foot tall model that they blew up.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, just because it's like a half a second scene. Like while I was watching all this behind the scenes stuff, like some of it was very interesting, and then it's like, wait, sorry, you built a whole model for the half a second that we see the roof blow up for? Like they shot a model just fully exploding or whatever, and then they shot in that train station and just dropped a bunch of rubble from the roof, which they dropped some like big rubble right in the foreground, and it was like kind of scary. It was like this, just this giant shit. Like if anybody had been under that, like, oh, that probably would have hurt, but the rest of the stuff was probably foam or whatever. But just weird, like watching a guy pipe in like caulking or whatever to stick a random molding into place on the roof of this model of the train station so they can half a second, like, just the weirdest cut. Made no sense to me.
Yeah, right on. And nowadays that would just all be CGI.
Exactly. Yeah. Just the amount of, like, the train, since we're at the train station, we might as well discuss the train. The whole time I rewinded that train scene a couple of times because I'm like, God, you just see those bathrooms like buckle out or whatever, and it like looks totally real, and it's 2000. There's no way they could have had CG that looked that real. Mm-hmm. And they totally did actually just like attach cables to the back of that train and yank that fucker apart with a bunch of extras inside. Like, and it looked sick. Like, it looked really good.
Yeah. No, that is a very cool moment.
I always wonder, like, if actors like Hugh Jackman, who's kind of seen the both worlds, I guess. But there would be something really cool to acting around practical effects. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually think being in a CG heavy movie would be kind of boring. Like, yeah. Even when I see the Marvel, like, the MCU movies behind the scenes, like, it all just looks so ridiculous with these massive green contraptions and people with their, like, little headsets with their faces at the right height so that their co-stars can, like, know where to look. And it's just, mm-hmm. like, wouldn't you just like to have something like this where you'd actually get to experience it live mm-hmm. while you're there?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Well, and then the second that scene cut to, everybody was like, whoa, that was cool.
You'd also think that Scott would carry a pair of backup glasses.
Right.
You know, like...
That must have happened at least one point. Like, he Velma'd himself.
And... Yeah, exactly.
Jinkies looking Jinkies around on the ground for his fucking his Oakleys.
Swipes. Yeah. But because he's so easily disarmed, though. Right? Like, because it's the same at the end. Like, that's all that Magneto has to do, too, is take away his glasses.
Yoink! And he's incapacitated.
Yeah.
Also, Storm, cool character. Love the concept of Storm. Fucking useless. What a waste of a character and a tremendous actress. She does nothing in this movie.
She has my favorite line, though.
She's got the fucking best line in the fucking movie. That's for sure. I know exactly what you're talking about. And she's only useful when she's outside. Cyclops has to blow a hole in the roof, and then all of a sudden, oh, that actually works out in our favor. We can use the weather. And then eventually she has to wait until everybody takes another character outside before she can do anything. Like she can't blow wind or some shit inside.
That's why,
like,
you need one or two other team members Why ever
bring Storm on an X-Men excursion unless it's going to be fucking outside for 90% of it? Otherwise, she's dead weight, dude. She can do a good spin kick or whatever, but other than that, she's fucking useless unless you're outside.
Yeah.
Just the weirdest thing. Like, I thought for sure they'd do some storm clouds on the roof or something, but no. Just when she's inside, she can't do it. Sorry.
Yeah, I can't remember. I feel like part of her power set is that she is able to control the weather, obviously, but also that she can create kind of like localized weather events.
Yeah.
But yeah, you are right. In the movie, it's like her only real purpose is to provide like cloud cover.
Which, genius. That must be very useful when they're flying that big plane.
Yeah.
We need a fog.
A storm's coming. That's another like... right on the nose line that it looks like a storm's coming. Ah, I see what you did there. Yeah. But yeah, so it's Rogue that ends up getting abducted, though, by Magneto, we find out. And so, you know, Logan is going to go look for Rogue when Senator Kelly shows up looking for Jean Grey. And we connect the dots of why they wanted Rogue is because Rogue is going to be able to operate this machine because she can steal Magneto's powers eventually. The bit where the senator basically turns into a water sack and just splashes onto the table apparently was originally going to be able to see like his organs as well. And they decided that would look too gruesome. So they left that part out. But yeah, that's still a very disturbing moment when he turns to liquid.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of it is very, like, they must have splashed a whole shitload of water all over that table because the very end of it looks very real.
Yeah.
That's one of the weaker effects in the movie, I will admit, but cool nonetheless.
Mm. Yeah.
Before we walk away from the train station scene, because that's the Magneto versus the cops and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, that too.
That's also all practical. They yank those cop cars up by, like, a crane and then drop those right back on another cop car. Like, so cool.
Yeah,
and
that
just
would be a fun day of filming.
Oh, what a good scene. Magneto's such a good, like, bad guy. Like, I have a thought experiment about Magneto, and I guess this would be the perfect time to bring it up, just considering how he fucks all those cops up without, like, a drop of sweat. At the end of the movie, he's eventually moved to this giant, weird, scientific, plastic prison cell. And I get that he was like, he was knocked out for the count by Rogue at the end of it. Sorry to jump a little bit ahead. Spoiler. But how the fuck did they end up arresting that dude? It must have taken months to build that weird plastic room that had no metal. There's no way they could, like, not have him around any amount of metal for a little bit that he could be properly around. None of it makes any sense. Even if he was knocked out for, like, a week, it would have taken, like, time to get all that shit arranged.
But, and are all the guards of that prison so carefully vetted?
Exactly.
That they don't even have fillings?
Fillings, exactly. There you go, filling. I didn't even think of fillings.
A stint in the heart, you know, like...
It's like, I've got paper clips on me every now and again, like...
I think it's... Yeah, like, I think they are. Like, that kind of comes into play when he escapes in the third movie. I don't know if you guys remember, but the way that he escapes is,
the liquid metal.
Well, they've been dosing one of the guards with, like, iron-rich,
right,
like, food, like, this iron, like, thing. And then he just pulls the iron out of his blood and makes these, like, little balls.
Move. Yeah. Which, awesome. Awesome. But exactly, it's like, there's too many, like, fucking everything has metal in it, man. How do you keep him away from metal for however amount of time?
Across the way, like, how far do his powers reach? Because the cop scene would show me that his powers reach fairly far.
Yeah.
That there's that control room. Those computers in there do not have 0% metal in them.
Yeah, it's all plastic circuit boards and whatever.
Yeah. Silicone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that seeing that whole, like, it was the retracting runway in his prison that I was like, that must have taken so long to put together. There's no way they got this dude.
You don't just go down to IKEA and pull one off the shelf.
There's thank fucking Christ we arrested a dude who has metal powers, because we've had this fucking plastic cell sitting here for months. Like, thank God the taxpayers' money goes to use. For a rainy day, we built this.
Especially considering, like, at the start of the movie when Kelly's talking in the Senate, it's pretty clear that, like, they have no idea who a mutant is. They have no idea who Magneto is. They have no idea what any mutant really is capable of doing. So, by the time you get to the end of the movie and they have this whole thing constructed, they're like, oh, we gambled on magnetism, guys, and it paid off.
It paid off. Promote Jimmy. Thank God he brought that up at the meeting.
That guy's a real go-getter.
I mean, unless they had, like, previous foresight given to them by Xavier, that would be the only thing. Like, unless he's had some pre-influence.
He's hacked their brains at some point.
Yeah, he set up a WandaVision universe where he's got a bunch of workers building the cell just in case.
I've always kind of felt like when it came to his cell that he had a hand in it, but there's nothing to really verify that.
The second Magneto got arrested, he went to the cops and he's like, look, hey, I've photocopied this folder I've had for years. It's just a bunch of shit you're going to want to know.
Yeah. And he definitely likes his bridges, but at least this one's covered. Because I must say, when he poisons his mind with the tainted Cerebro and falls out of his chair, it's like,
that could have been bad.
God, why can't Cerebro have a railing?
It's got a lip, so he can't roll off.
Oh, yeah, so he can't roll off. Yeah. Yeah, he's lucky he slumped forward.
Well, they put whatever mind poison into that fucking thing.
Yeah.
How was he supposed to know that was going to happen?
Yeah.
Is he being injected with something when he does Cerebro? Do they gas the top of his head and he breathes it in through his dome?
I don't know. Is Cerebro ever explained of how it works in the comics?
Yeah, what's the green thing? Is that Venom? Does he get all Batman rage
that's
or whatever?
That's not the thing in the comics. In the comics, Cerebro is purely like an amplifier.
Yeah.
It's just basically like nothing would be injected. It would just be like...
You just put it on your head and
it would just be like hooking an antenna onto your brain, basically.
Plugging the aux cord in.
Yeah.
But yeah, just... That whole drawer she pulls out, and it's like Professor Snape's fucking potions class in there or whatever. There's a bunch of vials with like gases and liquids and tubes and shit. It's like, what's going on, man?
It's a shame that Alan Rickman never made it into an X-Men movie.
What character would you cast him as?
Probably Mr. Sinister.
Ooh.
I feel like he could have done that well.
Yeah, the second you said it, that totally makes sense. Absolutely. Big bad vampire guy, like, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So while Charles Xavier is in a coma, Jean manages to fix Cerebro. I guess she drains out the bad fluid. And she knows where Magneto's going. He's going to Liberty Island because there's an event going on Ellis Island. And he is going to mutate a whole bunch of important people. I guess the King and Queen of Poland, which is not an official title anymore, but they were played by Bryan Singer's parents, I believe, is the trivia I read on that one. Yeah, so he got some family members in there. I mean, I never did give a shout-out to Stan Fucking Lee's cameo way
nepotism,
back.
Nepotism, man. Yeah, that Stan Lee, blink and you miss
Bryan
it.
Isn't Bryan Singer, like, disgraced at this point?
Yeah, I think he's a canceled one. Yeah, yeah. So we have to have the X-Men to the rescue, and so Wolverine is going to become part of the team, and this is where we get our black leather suit for him, but we get the joke of, what would you prefer, yellow spandex?
Yeah.
And they all stare into the camera and wink at us.
The yellow spandex would have been cool, though.
Apparently, they couldn't figure out a way to make it look good.
That's fair.
Until, like, they got the young people in there. You know, by then, I guess superhero costume technology had evolved to the point that you could make a
you
got to
squeeze
a yellow and blue.
A 22-year-old in there, not a 25-year-old or however old they were.
Yeah,
probably not much older though.
I'm pretty sure Hugh Jackman was older. I don't know, but he didn't have any huge credits before this. His previous credit before this was
Neighbors.
Oklahoma. He was Curly in Oklahoma. Yeah.
Part of me thinks you could have kept the leather and some of the black and maybe added a little bit more yellow highlights.
Yeah.
Like, I like the costume that he eventually gets in X3, which is kind of that. It has, like, the gold trim.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. My one thing I always felt was I wish they would have found a way to do the mask cool. Like, to me, Wolverine is always his mask is, like, so awesome that I always wish they would have found a way, even in passing, kind of like they do with Thor, where it's like, you know, like maybe twice in the entire history of the MCU, he's worn a helmet.
Yeah, I just wish he would have worn. They show it in that one movie, but he never wears it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same with, and even in that, it's a deleted scene.
Oh,
at the end,
is it?
At the end of the Wolverine, where they showed like what the mask could have been, but it's not in the theatrical cut.
So the jet takes off and they head off to save Rogue and save the world, I guess. And they,
the senators that are sitting, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. The world leaders, whatever.
You gotta save the politicians, I guess.
Yeah. The bit, though, where, like, I enjoyed that all the banter that happens in this. Like, this is really the first scene where they're really having fun bantering with each other is the Statue of Liberty scene, I think.
That's true, yeah.
Right? You know, things like Wolverine setting off the metal detector. You know, like, you know, just all these little fun moments. But then you end up getting these, like, pretty kick-ass fights. The Wolverine versus Wolverine and Toad.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting his weird, I don't know, his you can't do that on television ooze on.
I will say that end fight seemed like it dragged on for a little bit. It just seemed like they shot a bunch of stunts and went, well, we can't cut that. That costs a lot of money. We smashed a whole display case or whatever. And
yeah. Well, see, and Toad proves himself to be a bit of a badass, right?
Yeah.
a little bit. But there is that moment where he ends up kicking Storm down the elevator shaft, and he pulls the bar out of the elevator doors.
Yeah, like,
and flips it, you know, like does this fancy spin move with the staff and like does this pose. Is he doing his Darth Maul thing? Like, is that an homage to his Darth Maul character?
Because it's Ray Park.
Because it's Ray Park. Because it's like, it looks exactly like a move that he does in Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe. That whole thing, when he pulled the bar out of the elevator, it was like, oh, he like planned this out. He's like, I got to kick somebody towards the elevator and I could kick them down that, yank that bar out.
He Kevin McAllistered the hell out of the Statue of Liberty, man.
Toad kicked all of the X-Men's ass, like,
yeah,
single-handedly.
Single-handedly. And he's just the Toad.
And he's, dude who hops around has a big fucking tongue.
Yeah.
And spits goo. Yeah.
Of course, now here's a moment where Storm is able to manipulate some sort of weather, is in the elevator shaft, so she is able to do it inside a bit. Because she doesn't have the power of flight, does she? Isn't that her blowing herself up on wind? Isn't that how her powers work?
Well, yeah, because they explain it later. So. She's like, it doesn't work like that. I could accidentally throw you over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she ends up coming flying up in the shaft. And so, yeah, she's able to do some weather inside.
I guess that's a big enough air.
Yeah, who knows?
What?
A copper conductor, whatever. Yeah, so, and she gets one of the worst lines in the history of movies. Do you know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning? But apparently it was her decision to say this line seriously. The same thing that happens to everything else. It was supposed to be like, the same thing that happens to everything else. Like, it was supposed to be more of a throwaway, but she insisted on delivering it all serious.
What about he croaks? Staring you right in the fucking face.
There's a better answer to that, yeah. Absolutely.
God damn it, Hallie!
So then we also get the classic moment of, no, it's me, prove it, you're a dick. Yeah, it's him. You know, I love that moment between Scott and Cyclops. Yeah. Or Scott and Cyclops. Scott and Logan.
Scott and Cyclops, yeah.
But yeah, so eventually everybody gets bound into the Statue of Liberty in a weird twisted mutant Rube Goldberg machine that would end up killing everybody if Scott opens his eyes. And so I wrote down the same line that you did, though, with the "I thought you worked at a school."
Yeah,
but we get a little bit of villain monologuing. No one monologues like Sir Ian McKellen, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Patrick Stewart could give him a run for his money, maybe.
Now, one thing I want to know is the science behind stabbing yourself to escape.
It pushes him off the wall because the copper is harder. I don't know.
Yeah.
He did it, though.
I mean, this is kind of like when we were watching Speed and wondering how shooting the hostage actually benefits you. This is the same sort of thing. It's, you stab yourself, but you're still tied up in the same position. Like, did he also do a slashing motion to cut something loose, too?
Well, that's what I was thinking, but I don't think so, no. It pushes him off from the wall. They did, like, a snap cut to him pushing off of the wall once the, like, claws contact with it. Because I was thinking, if he went up with it, that would, like, sever something to not make you able to use your arms anymore, right? Like, if you just went up through your shoulders, yeah. Your arms would flop, you'd be like, oh, fuck, I gotta regenerate.
Yeah.
Well, is it just that, like, Magneto has set the pressure of the magnetism to push the metal just so, but now that he's gone, that, like, 1-inch push of the claws off is, like, enough to just, like,
dislodge you,
break whatever spell the metal is under?
Yeah. Spell. I don't know. Yeah. Pushes it out of the force field. Yeah. Now, we also then get, like, the fight of Wolverine and Sabretooth up on top. I don't understand the science of him flipping around the one crown.
You don't need to, because it looks...
Yeah, you don't need to. You just need to know that it looks awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
You see those cuts in it, and then it went all the way around, and it fell off, and he landed on the thing?
Uh-huh.
What else is there to get?
Yeah, okay.
It was fucking awesome.
Okay.
When they're doing that big old fight scene, there is a random sight gag at one point, because Cyclops and Jean Grey are staring at each other, where Wolverine's claws just snicked bub go right between their faces.
Yeah.
This is my second thought experiment I wrote down, because Colin probably knows this, I don't know about you, but Cyclops' eyes are a gateway to a different dimension, like a hell dimension that just releases a bunch of energy or whatever. But I did some Googling around, and he has died in the comics and nothing's happened, so I assume nothing would happen. But if he dies and his eyes just flopped open, would his eyes just remain gateways until they, like, decomposed or whatever? Like, could Wolverine have accidentally killed Jean Grey if he had stabbed Scott in the head accidentally?
I'm trying to remember, because I do think that if Cyclops, like, I feel like there is a comic where even though Cyclops is passed out, like, somebody opens his eyes and it still shoots.
Yeah. And like, they gotta, like, like slip the Oakleys on him after he passes, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta make sure that's in the will.
Must wear Oakleys, yeah, at open casket funeral.
Yeah, and delete my browser history.
Delete my browser
But I guess history. It depends if, like, I don't know.
right?
How that would work. Like, is it his nervous system that is like
connected,
like
to
if
it?
if his like nervous system is kind of offline, like say he was knocked unconscious or like had a massive brain injury or something, then if that is that the actual like connection point? I don't know.
Yeah.
Hard to know.
Yeah.
In the context of the movies, I feel like if he's out, he's out. But in the comics, it might be a different story.
Yeah.
Because, I did some Googling because I was like, it must have been addressed at some point that if he just dies with his eyes open, it's just like off into space or some shit.
That would be not good.
So finally, we've got the team up that we've been waiting for in an X-Men movie. We get them all working together to fly Wolverine up top to be able to cut the rings and save Rogue.
Fuck Wolverine.
Wow. Now,
Cyclops for the win at that end scene.
Well, now, okay, so he's got the one point where like his claws are bending backwards. Wouldn't they permanently stay in that position if adamantium was being bent back hard enough? You know, that there was enough force exerted to actually bend it. Wouldn't it stay bent once he ends up rescuing Rogue?
Maybe his bones have enough pressure to realign them when he pulls them back in or some shit.
Hmm.
But also, I think in that scene, he eventually bends them. It's very nice of him to bend them back, but I think he does bend them back at some point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, I think they go out and then they go in. It's like a, like, I'm yanking your fingernails up and...
It's weirdly, like, somehow at this point, Wolverine is, like, mustering the will to, like, deny Magneto's magnetism somehow. I don't know how, but yeah, you do see that part where his claws are, like, splayed back, but then when it turns to, like, a different vantage point, you can also see that they've come back into form, so I don't know. I think that was one of those situations where they probably weren't thinking logically, because if they were just like rolled back, unless he managed to move his fist in line with a different direction of of the angle of the magnetism, then maybe I don't know.
Yeah, right. He just bounced the magnets against each other until they formed back.
Yeah,
I bet you they just sent the one scene off to the VFX department to have the claws bent back, and then they just used another shot where he's wearing the prop claws or whatever. That'd be my guess.
Yeah. So, the team saves the day, Rogue's hair gets the gray stripe, and Magneto gets taken away to his plastic prison, and we find out that Mystique is still alive, but disguised as a guard. How is she able to hold the shape of someone else while she's unconscious, or is she still conscious, or... That just seems like exerting an awful lot of effort just to keep that shape.
Playing dead. She's hurt.
Yeah.
She needs help. She's just playing dead.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say. Just to jump back to the whole Wolverine saving the day. Pff, screw that. Professor X, pussy. Sabretooth, pussy. Magneto at the end of the day, kind of a pussy. Cyclops just blasted the 70-year-old Holocaust survivor right square in the fucking back. I thought for sure he was going to blast the machine or something. But no, and then we cut to, like, an overhead shot of Magneto, like, laying in a pool of blood. Attaboy for having the balls to do what needed to be done. If you were going to save the day, you might as well have just done it. Like, what's the point of flying Wolverine over there? You just blasted the fucking dude, save the day, done.
Right on.
Done. Professor X should have fucking ripped Magneto's throat out when he had the chance. He would have been like, hey, I'm here to reason with you. Magneto would have been like... fuck that. And you'd be like, all right, dude, sorry. We were friends, but yeah. Anyways, that's my bit.
And the movie is over before it even starts.
Sabretooth's a pussy. I threw that in there without really giving any context for it, but he didn't immediately attack Wolverine. And then I thought for sure when he took Cyclops' glasses, he was going to like break him in his hand or whatever. No, he leaves them on the ground so they can get him back with the girl who fucking moves shit with her mind. Like, duh. Ugh, pussies all over.
I feel like there's a like an alternative world where there's like a side TV show made in this movie where it's like Toad's life. Like, Toad... Toad is like, he doesn't get a lot of screen time, but I feel like when he's on screen, he's the most effective of the henchmen there are. Like, he's the only one who seems like he's really like knows what to do and is down to like down for the plan.
Yeah. Mystique is incredibly useful for the ability she has, but Toad gets shit done.
Then this is another part where I don't understand why they didn't have the foresight of casting people that you would want to use in future movies and ending up having to recast them later on down the road. You know, Charles ends up setting Logan off on this quest to find an abandoned laboratory. We see that, you know, everyone is pretty much still alive. So they set up a sequel, but, you know, they didn't establish the right things in this movie to set up that sequel. It feels like they must have been scrambling when X2 came around.
Mm-hmm.
He also steals Scott's motorbike to go to Northern Canada, where he's going to be able to use that for a couple months.
Yeah, well, free motorbike.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that like Kevin Feige is involved in this movie, because maybe that was a learning lesson for him. Like I said, the main drawback of the X-Men franchise is the lack of continuity and the constant like recasting and rehashing and like ignoring what's come before.
Mm-hmm.
And you do kind of get that in, like, even once you get to X2, it does pick up on stuff, but it's like, instead of just, I don't know, introducing like a whole swath of like small moments of mutants in the movie, then for the next few they keep scrambling to try to find ways of like, well, who do people like? Okay, people like Nightcrawler. Okay, let's find a way to bring Nightcrawler into you know, X2 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then people like Colossus, okay, like let's find a way to bring Colossus into X3 and that kind of stuff. Like, that's what I mean, where it would have been nice to have like a little bit more of an established team, like have your gold team and your blue team. Introduce the blue team like subtly. They don't have to be a big part of this movie, but maybe they come more into play in the later movie.
Yeah.
But at least they're already pre-established, rather than just constantly trying to throw in the new.
What people are asking for.
I will say, when Wolverine leaves the mansion to go on his quest or whatever, something about wearing just as many layers as possible just always looks cool. Like, this dude has everything in the closet on. He's he's wearing a shirt. He's wearing a button-up over that shirt. He's got a jean jacket on and then a leather jacket over top of that jean jacket. And what I can only assume underneath all of that is also the classic, like, white tank top.
Yeah.
Like, he has to be. So the dude's got, like, six fucking layers on. I get that he's from Canada, but it can't possibly be that cold that he needs to wear six layers when he goes outside.
It will be. Plus, you'd be extra cold if, like, your bones were made out of metal.
Fair enough. I didn't think about that.
I couldn't
help but notice that Hugh Jackman got top billing.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
I was surprised.
Yeah. That was odd too. Yeah, for what really was his breakout role.
I loved the intro to this. I love watching a good random movie intro where they play opening credits as well. It's just like such a forgotten era. Every time I roll into one of those, and this one especially, it, like, you know, the you wouldn't download a car, like the trailer. I was watching the trailer for X-Men because it's on the extras in Disney Plus, and the second it started playing, I swear to God, the exact same music as that fucking commercial or whatever, where it's that guy going through a video store and it's like the anti-piracy commercial. You wouldn't download a car. It's like like just playing that shit in the background.
I have no idea what you're talking about. So there we go, that is X-Men. Now Colin, Chris on IMDb, you know, it scored 7.3 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 64. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 82% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 83%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like lightning zapping a toad, hit us with some reviews.
Okay, Jackson M gives the movie 2.5 out of 5 stars and says, very, very cheesy. I can't really blame it for having bad CGI since it's pretty old. I've never seen the X-Men movies, so I started with this one and didn't exactly like it. The plot is cohesive, it makes sense, and you can figure out what's happening at any given time. The acting isn't terrible, but it's not amazing. Sometimes it feels like there's a random moment where the movie stops moving and it's really awkward. I also find the love interest of Logan and Jean Grey to be really forced. Not an incredible movie, but not bad for its time either.
Yeah, see, I mean, there is a moment that I do feel forced, which is the line at the end where he's like, I told her my heart belongs to someone else. It's like, really?
Weird, yeah.
You know, yeah. Yeah, you really want to force in this love triangle.
The Rotten Tomatoes reviews are all kind of like just bland.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like people are either writing nothing or they're writing a novel. AR558 says, to be honest, I'm not really a big X-Men movie fan. They're mostly just okay to me. The first film does a decent job introducing the cast and characters. I will say I enjoyed Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, Anna Paquin, and even James Marsden and Famke Janssen. Was there anybody else in the movie you wanted to mention? Aside from that, X-Men is just okay. Nothing really that spectacular, and at times it feels like a made-for-TV film, and I miss the bright outfits from the comics and TV show. I get why they use the black leather, since the original suits would have looked laughable, especially after Batman and Robin. But the cast makes it pretty entertaining at times. The action is nothing special, and the plot is okay, and all modern audiences might find the film meh, but honestly, for 2000, it was pretty good. I don't know if that makes any sense. I totally forgot one thing about this movie and the leather outfits is that actually ended up influencing the comic books. Right around 2000, they actually like kind of relaunched X-Men with Brad Gullickson from Comics Book Couples Counseling would appreciate Grant Morrison. I know that's one of his favorite guys, like took a run at it. Yeah. And they adopted this like leather clad X-Men style team for, you know, a few years before they eventually went back to the superhero spandex people are commonly know. Yeah, I don't know. There's not really any like good funny reviews that I can find here. They're mostly just like, oh, X-Men was good. It was a great start to the franchise. I like it. Nobody really seems to absolutely hate it unless they were like born in the modern era, I guess, but
okay, well, there we go. Yeah, so like I said, 7.3 and 83 from audiences and 64 and 82 from critics. I'm pretty sure I know where Chris is leaning with this. Chris, what did you think of X-Men on this viewing?
0 out of 10, no post-credits scene.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, that is true. You know, it's weird to... I actually did wait through the credits just in case, because I couldn't remember whether there was one, and yeah, I completely forgot that this was kind of the pre-post-credit scene.
Spider-Man wasn't in it. There was no mention to a multiverse or a bigger universe, and no post-credit scene, so honestly, -1 out of 10. I'm going to take back my original review.
Okay.
No, I loved it. Yeah, it was a good, just very refreshing. Again, it doesn't hold your hand. It kind of just throws you into it. Like, I knew what I was getting into. I know the X-Men, but still just very fun.
Yeah.
Been forever since I've seen it.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's been a while since I've seen it, and it was nice to step back into this universe having been so immersed in the other universe for so long that it's, you know, and because of where this franchise kind of ended up, where it's like when you see the most recent in the X-Men franchise, it's disappointing what happened to this franchise when you go back and see where it began. And so it was refreshing to go back and see this, because yeah, I haven't revisited it in a while, and yeah, I agree, it was a good watch. Colin, what did you think of X-Men on this viewing?
Yeah, I agree. Like, I was kind of scared to watch it, I'll be honest. Like, I haven't watched it in a while, and I was a little scared that it wasn't going to hold up as well as I remembered, but I thought it's still great. Like, it's still definitely one of the best X-Men movies there is, and I think it's like a really great superhero movie. I like, as we talked about, I like all the practical effects, and I like that there's not a heavy reliance on CGI. Everything looks really clean. You don't feel like you're watching half of a movie as like a cartoon almost, that can sometimes happen with these superhero movies, especially ones around this time. So yeah, I don't know. I still really like it, and it's a movie I would still recommend that people watch, especially if you need a break, as I kind of feel like I do from the MCU at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Until these guys end up in the MCU.
Which, yeah, there's no way Hugh Jackman doesn't make a appearance during the, like, Kang Avengers that they announced or some shit. Like, I'd put a fair amount of money on that for sure, that he'll make an appearance. There's no way Logan was the last one.
No, I mean, Patrick Stewart's already made another appearance.
Exactly. In the cartoon wheelchair.
Yeah.
I actually think it's more likely that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine shows up in Deadpool 3 than in the MCU proper.
Yeah.
Just because I think the Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds thing, like, it would just be such a, like, it would be on the level of Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire showing up in Spider-Man No Way Home to have Hugh Jackman's Wolverine show up one last time with Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool. Yeah. Even if it was just for like 10 minutes.
I read a pitch for Deadpool 3 that someone had written up where it was him kidnapping real life Hugh Jackman, convinced that he was Wolverine in a movie, and it's like a buddy cop where it's just Hugh Jackman, the guy with Deadpool.
That would be epic.
It'd be so good.
And somehow bring Fred Savage back.
Yeah.
Maybe Fred Savage could be Wolverine.
He's a director for Always Sunny in the first couple seasons. Maybe he'll direct the next one.
There you go. Yeah. Well, there you go. That is X-Men, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. Big thank you to my son, Chris Wells, for joining us to talk about X-Men. Anything else to say, Chris?
No. Oh, the dangerous weapons in schools? That's the line I was searching for at the beginning.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. We managed to close the door on that one.
Yeah.
Finally. Tie up that loose thread.
Finally. You were all waiting, I knew, so.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, just tell someone. Spread some word of mouth for us and help get more earballs on this show. Or go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. We'd love 5 of them. 5 is the best kind. Go give us some stars and help drive us up the charts. Help us get noticed. Or if you want to be a supporter of this show financially and just help us take care of our monthly expenses that we have on this show, a couple bucks a month, you become a producer. And you can get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum, and just by going over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and becoming part of our Patreon family.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all our podcast episodes as well as our social media pages. And if you want to, drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. And if you want to hear more from me, check out my stories as a bus driver on my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Oh boy. Well, that's gonna be a fun one to edit.